Listen, as I pick up tonight, fifth chapter of the book of Genesis, that's Genesis chapter 5. Let me just back up a few minutes here, okay? Scientists are telling us, okay, and they're acting like this is a fact, but it's nothing more than a theory, that all of this universe really began some 15, 20 billion years ago. You know how it began? According to their guess, according to their theory, according to their hypothesis, their assumption, they said that matter was so tightly compacted, so dense, it was almost the size of my fingernail. And then there was this massive, massive, massive explosion, the Big Bang theory. Okay, we've all heard of that, where everything goes flying in every which direction. Okay, and then given enough time, through billions and billions and billions and billions of years, you know, all of this matter that has been spewing out of space and spinning in every which direction, okay, has been the end result of where we are today. Our solar system, they say, that is between 4.5 to 5 billion years old. And I think that it just amazes me that people can sit there and tell us with a straight face how we all came into being by chance. Here's what they say, okay, basically. I just put it in a nutshell. This is what the scientific evolutionists say. Some kind of unknown chemicals in the primordial past through an unknown process. Okay, first of all, there's unknown chemicals through an unknown process, which no longer exists, of course, produce unknown life forms, which have never been, you know, found, but they say they could if they dig far enough, through some unknown reproductive methods, were able to spawn new life in an unknown atmospheric composition, in an unknown oceanic soup, okay, at an unknown time and place. Now, this is all speculative, okay? I just wrote this down because if you look at it, everything is unknown. All these factors are totally unknown, okay? But according to the evolutionists, it all began with a bang. Now, you and I know perfectly well that what do explosions produce? You tell me. What do explosions produce?
Destruction.
There's no order to it. There's absolutely no order to any explosion. What are the chances of you going around and throwing dynamite at hardware stores that you're going to put anything together from an explosion? What are the chances? Put a gorilla down at a computer or a typewriter, okay? You have them whack away at it, okay? What are the chances after thousands and thousands of years even, if he's whacking away at it, that he could come up with a saying like, to be or not to be, okay? What are the chances of him coming up with that? Well, the same chances of him coming up with that, to be or not to be, I can guarantee you the next word is going to be blah, 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 blah. Right? But what are the chances you're putting down this gorilla at a typewriter and have him type out letter for letter, word for word, in perfect order and sequence, the entire Webster's Unabridged Dictionary? What are the chances of that happening? Well, that's what we're talking about here. That's what we're really talking about. The chances that a gorilla could sit down and type out, by chance, by random chance, the entire Unabridged Dictionary. He's got more of a chance of doing that than for life to come to have become to what we know it today through random chance. Okay? Now, I know I got to get off of the soapbox because I just feel like I've gone way too far right now, but I feel like what we need to do is we need to take an intelligent look at the facts, because, man, our kids and our, you know, are growing up with all of this atheistic, godless stuff that's being rammed down their throat, all right? And there's no purpose, there's no rhyme, there's no meaning to life. I don't care how you cut it. Once evolution, okay, takes over as being the order of the day, which it has, not just in this country but around the world, okay, then God is completely pushed out of the picture. We don't need God. God is dead. We don't need him. All creation just happened. And the magic wand, or actually the God that's behind it all, is time. Given enough time, anything can happen. Well, that's just absolutely ludicrous. That's just absolutely asinine. Because we know that in time, everything breaks down, deteriorates, falls apart, and everything else. It doesn't build itself up. Okay? Now what I wanted to get into now is I wanted to read this chapter 5. Now, in this reading this chapter 5, it may seem on the surface, well, a little bit boring, because what it deals with is so-and-so begat so-and-so and so-and-so begat so-and-so. But I want you to keep a couple things in mind when we read this chapter 5. And it's going to get even more so in chapter 10 and 11, I believe. And what it kind of reminds me of, when we go through this chapter 5 and we go through that chapter 10, 11, it says so-and-so begot so-and-so and he lived so many years and he died. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of walking through a cemetery. I mean, I've done this a number of times in my life as a Christian, especially when I really get down sometimes and I feel like, man, I don't know if I'm going to make it. I just don't have, feel like I've got the wherewithal, the strength to just keep putting one foot in front of the other. You know what helps me sometimes? Go to a quiet cemetery and just slowly walk through the cemetery and just look at all the headstones. You know, I'll glance at the name, but what I'm really looking at is the dates. And it always amazes me. It always intrigues me of looking at the dates because, you know, I always see that, hey, it amazes me the number of people who have died at such a young age. Like, I'll be 50 this month, okay? It amazes me the number of people who have died before they reach that age 50. But even if they live to be an age 100, you always see the year of birth and year of death, all right? I mean, this is one thing that God has specifically told Adam and Eve, that the day that you eat of this forbidden fruit, that is the day you shall die, okay? Adam lived 930 years, all right? However, he died. And now we see the end results of what's happening to us. And keep a couple things in mind. It's so important that we recognize this. Before the flood, before the Noachian flood happened, everything was so conducive to longevity and actually even for size, all right? The way God had constructed the world. And I mentioned this before. I'm not going to go into it in much detail, but just simply how he constructed a world that had a vapor canopy around it. It had a hot house effect. There were no polar ice caps. There were no barren deserts. There were no wastelands. Everything was extremely conducive to reproduction and to life and to vitality. But not only that, the gene pool of man was so pure, okay, that everything was conducive to him living many, many, many years. All right? It wasn't until after this canopy collapsed during the flood. And now we got all these harmful sun rays coming in, and now the gene pool is so polluted that God said through Moses that 70 years are given man because of strength, some may live to be 80. You know, and it's a rare thing if a person pushes 100. But go back to the beginning of time, you know, where you see how these people have lived so many centuries. It's because their genetic makeup as well as the environment was extremely conducive to longevity. All right? So we could just simply take God at his word there. All right, but keep a couple things in mind when we go through this, because now one of the things I want you to keep in mind is the population growth when we get into reading this, all right? Because if you look at the genealogy list that's given to us, all right, we actually can see that the recorded history of mankind is only about 6,000 years. And we have a lot of geological evidence, what they call geological clocks, to support the fact that we have a young Earth. All right? I'll get into some of that later as far as some other details of it. We could use the sun as an example. You could use topsoil as an example. I've already used moon dust as an example. I've used asteroids as an example. There's over 70 different geological clocks from which can be used to show that the Earth is very young. You know what the interesting thing is? There's only about 3 or 4 geological clocks that are being used to show that the Earth is old. But these geological clocks are something like carbon-14 dating or uranium dating or radioactive dating. And all of these methods have been shown to be totally incorrect in so many different ways. But these are the ones we constantly hear about. We don't hear about the ones that are really showing the Earth to be very young. And it's substantiated as far as the fact that mankind, his origins back up 6,000 years. We are told by evolutionists that man is supposed to have been around for about 1 million years, okay? The Bible says he's been around about 6,000 years, okay? And let's just look at the population that we have today and figure out in a very, very, I think, conservative way what the population would be if mankind had been around 1 million years, okay? Go back to the old saying. What would you rather have, $1 million, or would you rather have a penny a day doubled every day for a month? What would you rather have? You'd rather have a penny a day doubled every day for a month, because if you did, you'd be well over a millionaire, because numbers multiply themselves when they start doubling. All right, it's the same thing as far as our population. But let's pick up where we left off in chapter 5, actually beginning of verse of chapter 5. But what I want to do is let's read the last two verses of chapter 4 as we get into chapter 5, because it kind of goes right along, okay, with what we're going to be reading here. It says in that verse 25 in chapter 4, it says, "And Adam had relations with his wife again, and she gave birth to a son and named him Seth, for she said, 'God has appointed me another offspring in the place of Abel, for Cain killed him.' And to Seth, to him also the son was born, and he called his name Enosh. Then men began to call upon the name of the Lord." Okay, now, Seth was born when Adam was 130 years old. All right? Now, keep something in mind, okay? When God blessed Adam and Eve, said, "Be fruitful, multiply," believe me, Eve, being a mother, coming directly from the hand of God, her reproductive capabilities were incredible, all right? Her health, her genetics, her everything, environment, everything was extremely conducive to reproduction. It's my belief that they had hundreds of kids. All right. We are not told that in Scripture. We are told that they had many sons and daughters. We don't know how many. Okay. But then you times that out, and I mentioned this last week. God's original design, His original intention, was that brothers and sisters were to marry each other. Okay. Now, it's forbidden, and God forbid it through the Mosaic Law. But originally, God's design was that brothers and sisters were to intermarry, because the gene pool was absolutely pure. It wasn't until man fell, it wasn't until sin entered the world, that then, after so many generations, the gene pool became more and more polluted. And I mentioned this the other day. What would you rather drink from? The water that comes from the source of the Mississippi or the mouth of the Mississippi? You go up to Minnesota, where the source is, you get fresh, clean water, right? When you get down to the mouth, what do you got? I mean, you've got everything from silt to mud to garbage to dead bodies to raw sewage. I mean, this is the way a gene pool works too, all right? So the closer you are to the source, the more pure it is. Well, by the time Moses came along, God said that your brothers and sisters were not to intermarry. He forbade that. Their first cousins weren't to intermarry, because what they call is gene stacking. If you've got some bad genes, okay, they're going to stack on top of each other, where your offspring is going to get these bad genes. That's why when you have intermarriage, very often, between brothers and sisters, you will have an offspring that's retarded, that's mentally, physically, emotionally handicapped in some way because of the genetic mess up that's there, because the gene pool is so polluted at this point. But it wasn't at its source. All right. So when it says here that that Seth was given to Adam and Eve, and Eve referred to him as Seth, means appointed. In other words, she looked at him as perhaps he was now the appointed one in the place of Cain, who she figured would be the one that would lead him back into the garden because of their rebellion, right? She was looking for the Savior. Well, anyway, through the line of Seth, now if we follow this, we will see that comes the line of Christ, all right? There was the line of Cain, and now the line of Seth. We are not given the genealogy of Cain. We are not given, okay, his descendants. We are not told how old they lived to be and who begat who on his side. I think that's pretty significant, because up here we are told that through the line of Seth, okay, men began to call upon the name of the Lord. Look at that verse 26 in that chapter 4. "And to Seth, to him also was a son born, and he called him Enosh. Then men began to call upon the name of the Lord." In other words, through the line of Seth, men began to seek God. And there was a kind of a spiritual revival. This was the godly line through which Christ would eventually be born. And he says here in that verse 1, "This is the book of generations of Adam. In the day when God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. He created them male and female, and he blessed them and named them man in the day that when they were created. And when Adam had lived 130 years, he became the father of a son of his own likeness according to his image and named him Seth." Interesting thing, okay? It says here, it's giving us the generations of Adam. But it also says that God created man. He created him in his likeness of God. Then it says over here in verse 3 that Adam had lived 130 years and he became the father of Seth, of a son of his own likeness. Why is there that distinction? Any idea? God said he made Adam in his likeness, and now it says Adam begat a son in his own likeness. There, exactly. Well, God made Adam and Eve. He made them male and female. He created them in his image and likeness. Interesting thing. It's just a kind of a side note, but it's kind of significant what it says in verse 3. It says not that Seth was born not in the image of God, but in the image of his father, meaning now he is a born sinner, which I think is very significant. All right? Another thing that I think is kind of significant, in verse 2, it says, he created a male and female, and we've already gone through the differences of that. I mean, you could write volumes and volumes on it, how, you know, there's such a vast difference between men and women. Okay, but he says, he blessed them and named them man. Does anybody in the Bible say Adam or mankind? Adam. He named them Adam. That's kind of significant, okay? In other words, I know the feminists would be up in arms about this, but he named them, the man and the woman, he named them man, or he named them Adam, in a sense. And in a sense, it's really a prefigurement of Christ. Because when a couple gets married, this has been the tradition since all the way back to the beginning, is that the woman traditionally takes on the name of her husband, doesn't she? That kind of woman takes on the name of her husband. In other words, she's to lose her identity in the man. Now, let me get something straight here, okay? This is no way, shape, or form suggests that the man is better than the woman, or the man needs to dominate the woman, or the two of them are not equal as far as value, or anything like that. Because I know if the media was here, they would blow this out of proportion like they do everything else and make it a big stinking lie. By the time they finished regurgitating it out for the public, you know, to digest, there's no question about it. It's just simply taking God at His word. Now, in a sense, this points to Jesus Christ, because the church is to lose her identity in Him, and that's what you see that symbolism there. So that's why God called them man. He made them male and female and called them man, or He called them Adam, or He called them mankind. Okay? In other words, the two became one flesh, and in God's order, His design, the woman was to lose herself in the man. And that's where, in a sense, pointed to the fact that we are to lose ourselves in Christ. We are to find our identity in Him. In verse 3, it says, and when Adam lived 130 years, he became the father of a son of his own likeness, according to his image, and he named him Seth. Then the days of Adam after he became the father of Seth were 800 years, and he had other sons and daughters. That's all it says. He had other sons and daughters. But he also had other sons and daughters long before he had Seth. I'm willing to bet he had over 100 kids before then. Because by the time he had Seth, he was 130 years old. And he lived how long after he became the father of Seth? Another 800 years. All right? And the guy was, so I know this is speculative, but hey, if the guy was more, in my opinion, probably had hundreds of kids. Or, you know, I mean, he certainly had the physical capabilities, and so did his wife, to produce that many children. And then, geometrically speaking, I mean, the world, you know, could easily have been populated. If you look at the numbers, they figure that that from Adam till the flood, it was something like 1,600 50-something years or something between from Adam and the flood. And it's estimated that if each family just had 5 kids, the world's population at that time of the flood would have been about 3 billion people. Okay? Because what we're talking about is the same concept of mathematics, where what would you rather have, $1 million or a penny every day, doubled every day for a month, for 30 days? You see, you're not going to make much the first 2 weeks, believe me. But after that, man, it starts multiplying and multiplying, and where, you know, your numbers become almost astronomical. Okay, the present-day population that we have is around 6 billion people, all right? And this is well in line with, if you were to go back to the Noachian flood. The Noachian flood was roughly 4,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, 4,500 years, somewhere around in there, okay? Well, we're right around the number we should be at, you know, on a very, very conservative basis. In other words, we're almost 6,000 now, but if you backed up before only 4,000 years ago and you made it, average family had 2.5 children instead of 3.5, okay, per family, and it only that would only give you a 0.5% a year annual growth. I know I don't want to get you all confused with a bunch of numbers here, but what I'm trying to say is this, okay? In 4,000, 5,000 years, we are right where we should be in a very very conservative figure. That's taking into account wars, it's taking into account famine, it's taking into account plagues and this things to wipe out large numbers of people. But at the same time, in spite of all that, we are right around the population we should be at if the history of man began some 5,000 years ago or began back as far back as the flood, as far back maybe as 4,500 years ago, somewhere around in there. When we're reading the disc genealogy, we got to look at the numbers. We got to do the math. Okay, we got to come to a logical conclusion. Okay, what do these numbers represent? Why are we given these figures? Hey, we're given it for our instruction to show, yes, this is a relatively young earth. And you could trace back the history of mankind to about 6,000 years ago. And I think it's very significant. Now, this is speculative on my part. But God's number is what? God's perfect number is what? 7. What's man's number?
6.
So this is speculative now. I think it goes right along with everything that we've been reading in Scripture, that something's inferred here. I believe that man's going to have 6,000 years of reigning, or that man is going to reign for 6,000 years. And then at the end of the 6,000 years, he's going to utterly destroy himself to the point that Jesus said, unless those days be shortened, unless he come back and put an end to man's insanity, nobody would be saved. No flesh would be saved. Every living creature on the face of this earth would be wiped out. That's after 6,000 years of man's reign. Okay? But then, what's going to happen? We're told very specifically in the Bible that Jesus is going to come back and set up his millennial kingdom. His millennial kingdom, millennium means thousand. He's going to reign for 1,000 years. So you see, man has his chance for 6,000 years and blows it. He's going to blow this world sky high. Christ will come back at the nick of time to put an end to the destruction. And then he will start all over again with Christ ruling and reigning, and he will reign for 1,000 years. Now, it's speculative, I realize this, but it makes perfect logical sense to me because it goes right in line with God's number of perfection. Man's number is 6, so man reigns for 6,000 years and blows everything to pieces. But just before his total destruction, Christ comes back, sets up the millennial kingdom, and reigns for 1,000 years to make this 7,000 years complete of mankind's history before we enter into what? The eternal state. Okay? I mean, it makes sense to me, and you don't have to believe it if you don't want to, but I really believe it, that we are so close to Christ's return because mankind has been around just about 6,000 years. And he says this in verse 5, so all the days of Adam were 930 years, and he died. Now remember what God said to Adam, the day that you eat of the fruit, you shall surely die. Okay, he didn't die until over 900 years later, right? But he surely did die, didn't he? All right? It was the devil who came around and said, indeed. Isn't that kind of interesting? God said surely, and the devil says indeed. Remember? God said, the day that thou eatest it, thou shalt surely die. In other words, hey, you can take it to the bank. I mean what I say, it's going to happen. The devil comes by and says, indeed. In other words, he throws his word out like, hey man, you know, God's lying to you. You know, you've been flim-flam, you've been jerked around, you've been lied to, and they fell for it hook, line, and sinker. But we can take God at his word. Even though Adam lived over 900 years after his disobedience, he died. Okay? But he died physically. The day he ate of it, he died spiritually. Okay? And then it says here in verse 6, it says, and Seth lived 105 years and became the father of Enosh. And Seth lived 807 years after he became the father of Enosh. And he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Seth were 912 years and he died. Now, you know, if you got a pen and pencil, you could almost underline, and he died, and he died, and he died, and he died. Because it's almost like walking through a cemetery. It's almost like walking through a graveyard. Even though these men lived centuries. Okay, it boggles my mind. I tell you, the way the world is now, there's no way I'd want to live that long. No way. I mean, I'm ready for the trumpet to blow now, man. I want out of here. Okay? But back then, life wasn't so difficult. It wasn't so complicated. It wasn't so much stress, and it wasn't so much, you know, hassle as it is today, which is another reason why they live so long, all right? But now we are under such pressure, such strain, and such a spiritual, emotional, mental, physical, pressures that it's hard for me to imagine living that long, okay? And yet, like I said, you go back to the source, the gene pool and the environment were extremely conducive to what? Longevity. And even God himself said after the fall, he kicked him out of the garden and sent an angel, a cherubim, with a sword pointing in every direction to keep him from coming back in the garden. Why? Who remembers?
To take from the tree of life forever.
Right, because God said if they eat from the tree of life, they'll live forever even after their disobedience. Okay? Because they were so constructed genetically, put together, they were so perfect, they were so ideal that they had the genetic capacity to live forever if they just had the right sustenance to sustain themselves. And this is one other reason why is my contention that, you know, when we read earlier on in the scriptures, that God said specifically that he gave every fruit-bearing kind of tree, okay, and every herb of the ground for not just man's, food for sustenance, but also the animals. And it wasn't until after the flood. It wasn't until after the flood that God said to Noah, I'm giving you every moving creature on the face of the earth for your food. Remember that? So in other words, before the flood, it seems like all men ate were fruits and vegetables. And they lived for such a long period of time. But after the flood, the world was so changed, so dramatically changed. I mean, its geography and its topography had been so altered with such a cataclysm, such a catastrophe that happened. That now the ground and everything was not going to sustain life like it used to. So other life forms were going to have to subsist on each other in order to live. We just got back from Monterey, and I think it's kind of interesting that down there, if you go to the aquarium, they've got this little, this little spiel on a videotape where it's talking about how we are harvesting the oceans to such an extent today where we are really endangering our own species because so many of the, we are harvesting the oceans so fast, okay, as far as our food supplies are concerned, that we're running out, okay? I think that's kind of significant because God knew that the way that the earth was cursed after the flood, that fruits and vegetables were not enough to sustain man's life or other forms of life. So that's when, carnivores really began to take over. And now we eat, virtually everything that moves, and now we can see that our food supply is running out, even in the ocean, which we once thought was inexhaustible as far as this food source is concerned. Okay? And he says here, verse 9 says, and Enosh lived 90 years and became the father of Kenan. And Enosh lived 815 years after he became the father of Kenan, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Enosh were 905 years, and he died. And Kenan lived 70 years and became the father of Mahalalel. And Kenan lived 840 years after he became the father of Mahalalel, and he had other sons and daughters. And so the days of Kenan were 910 years, and he died. And Mahalalel lived 65 years and became the father of Jared. And then Mahalalel lived 830 years and became the father of Jared, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Mahalalel were 895 years, and he died. And Jared lived 162 years, and he became the father of Enoch. And Jared lived 800 years after he became the father of Enoch, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Jared were 962 years, and he died. And Enoch lived 65 years and became the father of Methuselah. Then Enoch walked with God 300 years after he became the father of Methuselah, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Enoch were 365, and Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Now here's a really interesting side note, what's happening here, right? We're going after genealogy, Jared has a son by the name of Enoch. Enoch, it says, we walk with God, all right? But Enoch, as I mentioned before, and I mentioned in the retreat, Enoch, had such a close relationship with God that he was actually a prophet. We are told that in the book of Jude, that Enoch was the seventh generation from Adam, and that he actually saw Jesus Christ coming back with tens of thousands of his holy ones. He saw the second coming of Christ, and he predicted it. Okay? But he also named one of his sons Methuselah. Methuselah means, when he is dead, it shall be sent. So, Enoch, when he named his son Methuselah, saying this, when my son dies, the world is going to be destroyed. And we know that Methuselah lived to be the oldest living human being in recorded history. He lived to be 969 years old. All right? And then after that, the flood did come. All right? But look at Enoch. All right? Enoch is a type of who? Symbolically speaking. No, he's a type of who? He represents who? It says Enoch was no more because God took him. What does Enoch represent? Who does Enoch represent?
Church.
To the church. Very good. In other words, Enoch was translated. Enoch did not die. We read again and again and again that these people lived incredibly long lives. Okay? They lived for centuries, but the bottom line was that they died. Then we come to Enoch. Enoch is very, very unique. It says that he walked with God. Okay? How many times does the Bible talk about to walk in the newness of life, to walk in the Spirit, to walk in such a way, okay, that we are making progress in a definite direction? That's what walking is. Okay, when you walk with God, it means that you are making progress in a very definite direction. That's what walking is. All right? That's why we are told to walk with God. I'm telling you, if we're going to walk with drug addicts, we're going to become a drug addict. You know, if we're going to walk with the immoral, we're going to become immoral. If we're going to walk with the blasphemer, we're going to become a blasphemer. If we're going to walk with agnostic or atheist or, you know, these type of people, we're going to become just like them. But if we walk with God, we are going to start making progress in a very definite direction, okay, spiritually speaking, all right? That's what the Bible, you know, they mention is that Enoch is one that walked with God, but then God took him at a very specific point in time. In other words, he didn't die. Everybody else we read about dies. Enoch represented the church at the rapture. Because Paul tells us in Corinthians, he says, "Behold, I tell you a mystery, we shall not all die, but we shall be changed from mortal to immortal when? In a twinkling of an eye." Just like that, okay? When Christ comes back in the clouds, he's going to come back in the clouds where nobody's going to see him, because he's going to come back in the clouds as a thief in the night, 7 years before he comes back where every eye will see him. Okay? But Enoch represented the church. Enoch represented people who walk with God. It's not enough to just make a profession of faith in God. I guarantee you that during Enoch's day, I'll bet you anything that you could not find one atheist. And the reason I say this is if you look at the genealogy here, you see that Enoch was alive when Adam was alive. In other words, you know, these men, if you look at their history, they had first-hand knowledge. It wasn't just hearsay. Adam could say, "Hey, listen, this is the way the beginning was. God created me. He created this garden. He created my wife, and this is what happened to us." Enoch could get the information firsthand, okay, right from the horse's mouth, because he was still alive when, you know, Adam walked the earth. Enoch walked with God. Well, where was everybody else? I'm sure that everybody else believed in God, because the evidence was all there, and the first man was still around to confirm it. I'm just bringing this point across to the fact that Enoch walked with God. Now, I'm of the belief. The same thing today in the United States, over 96% of the people in this country claim to believe in God. 63% of the adults in this country claim to be born again. All right? If 96% of the people in this country claim to believe in God, obviously something is radically wrong when we look at what's happening around us as far as the corruption and the moral decay of our society, isn't it? Because this is nothing more than mental assent. I think the same thing was true in Enoch's day, that you probably had 99.99% of the population at that time that had no problem with believing in God. But how many people were walking with God? That's the key. If we're walking with God when he returns, okay, I believe we're going to be spared the final judgment. Let's read the verse 22 again. Then Enoch walked with God 300 years, and he became the father of Methuselah, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. And Methuselah lived 100 years, and Methuselah lived 187 years and became the father of Lamech. And Methuselah lived 782 years after he became the father of Lamech, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Methuselah were 969 years, and he lived. And he died, Okay, now here's he is the oldest recorded, he's the oldest person to live in all recorded history. 969 years. Okay, he lived almost 40 years longer than Adam, who came directly from the hand of God. But Methuselah means what? When he is dead, it shall be sent. That's what Enoch aimed his son Methuselah. Okay? Enoch knew that God was going to destroy the world, but look how long this man lived. All right? For 1,000 years, he carried this name. It was like a living prophecy saying, hey, look it. Okay, when I die, rest assured, God will destroy this earth because of its ungodliness. All right? For us, it seems like it takes forever. But Peter did tell us that with God, with the Lord, 1,000 years is but a day, and a day is but 1,000 years. Meaning what?
Time is irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly. God's outside of time. Time is totally irrelevant. Look, I've been a Christian. It'll be 26 years this October. I remember first becoming a Christian, and I got so enthused and so excited with the prospect of the second coming of Christ, which I never knew anything about. And so I started delving into reading the Bible, reading Scripture, reading extra-biblical literature, reading everything I could get my hands on about all the prophecies and all the current events that are coming unfolding. But I remember, as a young Christian, having so much enthusiasm, saying, man, it's going to be any time now. And I was so excited. Well, it's been almost 26 years now, and I'm still waiting. Okay? But I'm more convinced now that we're closer than ever, but yet at the same token, it seems like, man, it's just taking so long. I mean, on one hand, it seems like it's going fast. But on the other hand, it just seems like everything's in slow motion, doesn't it? I mean, when you're looking ahead, it seems like, gosh, it just seems so far away. But when you look behind you, you say, man, that went fast. You know, it's almost as though we're just going down, careening down a straight highway, doing 120 miles an hour. But after you've been traveling at that speed for so long, it doesn't seem like you're moving that fast. Okay? I don't care. Telephone poles could look like a picket fence you're passing. I mean, it's just you're going so fast. Okay? And yet you don't see it. I'm sure that many people, in Methuselah's day figured, oh, man, life's just going to go on and on and on and on and on the way it is. Business as usual. Okay, now you consider the fact that it's been projected that there probably was something like 3 billion people on the face of the earth at that particular time because of the calculations that you can come up with as far as the reproduction, as far as population. Well, and that's very conservative.
Saying all the young people at the time were saying, oh, that old guy, he's been around for over 900 years, hasn't happened yet.
Right, exactly. And just like there were scoffers and mockers, like Peter talked about, there'll be in the last days, there'll be scoffers and mockers who will say, hey, where's the promise of his coming? Because everything since the beginning has remained the same. Well, they could say the same thing in Noah's day in regards to Methuselah. Methuselah lived 969 years, but, his accomplishments seem to be nil. In other words, all he's got here is a longevity. Now, I don't want to be uncharitable here, but I'm kind of thinking to myself in terms of, I look around and I see people today whose primary goal in life is to prolong their life. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, I don't know how many people I've run across who say, man, yeah, I'd like to live to be over 100. I'd like to be 110. But what I'm saying is that, hey, what are people going to say when they get to see God? Their big accomplishment is life. Well, Lord, I live to be 110 years old. I mean, well, believe me, if you live to be 110, you got that much more to account for, all right? I think that what our goal should be is, hey, to make every moment count for Christ, okay? And not to be so concerned with longevity, but really the quality, not the quantity of our life. And he says here in that verse 28, Lamech lived 182 years, and he became the father of a son. And he called his son Noah, saying, "This one shall give us rest from our work and from the toil of our hands, arising from the ground which the Lord has cursed." And Lamech lived 595 years after he became the father of Noah, and he had other sons and daughters. So all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. And Noah was 500 years old, and Noah became the father of Shem, Ham, and Jephthah. Okay, just in concluding, Lamech had, his son was named Noah, and he named him Noah because he figured, well, Noah's going to give me rest from my work. I don't know exactly what he had in mind. I guess he figured, well, this son of mine is going to be able to share my workload and make it easier on me as far as making a living or eking out a living because the ground has been so cursed or whatever. But we all know what really happened in regards to Noah. Instead of giving people rest from their labors, he really ended up only, all of their work came to nothing. Because of what? Because of their, forsaking God. And keep this in mind. All of our work is going to come to nothing. I don't care if it's as individuals or if it's as a nation. It's going to come to nothing. Unless it's done for what? For Christ. The old saying, there's only one life, it soon be passed, only that which is done for Christ will last. This nation has forgotten God, it has forsaken God. So everything it's done is going to come to nothing. And that's the same thing with individual lives. How many millionaires do you think are in this country or in this world today? Now we're getting a number of billionaires, okay? And I mentioned this the other night, the Koch brothers or whoever they are, they're billionaires, and they're suing one another, believe it or not. They can't possibly spend what they've got, but they're worth billions, all right? But they're suing one another, okay? I mean, it's all going to come to nothing. Because only that which is done for Christ will last. Because Jesus said this, he says, even a cold glass of water given in my name will not lose its reward, right? If you do something in Jesus' name, if you do something out of love for God, that's going to have eternal significance. Everything else will come to nothing. Anybody have anything you want to add or share what we read tonight?
No.